Hi, I'm Meredith.
And I'm Katie.
And you're listening to I'm Not Scared, You're Scared,
a horror movie podcast.
If you're a fan of the show, please like and follow us on iTunes and Spotify and review us. It'll help spread the word.
Also, you can follow us on Instagram at I'm Not Scared, You're Scared, or email us at I'm Not Scared, You're Scared at gmail.com.
Thanks for joining us. We're here to talk about The Gallows, which was released in 2015.
Yes, ma'am.
I watched it. I watched the recap of the sequel, because there's a sequel.
Okay.
So I hope, I kind of was doing other stuff when I watched the recap part of the sequel, so.
I've never seen the sequel, so you're ahead of me.
I don't think
that.
You missed much. But before we dive into any of that, what's new with you, Katie?
Back to school, baby.
Yep.
I mean, and that's always, I feel like it's kind of a cheat that that's always what's new with us is school. But this is like, actually, this, you know, last week was our first week of instruction, like students in the classroom. And it went really well. I like my class a lot. You know, I still miss my guys from last year and seeing them in the halls and at the assemblies and everything, like missing them a little bit. But I feel like I'm off to a really good start with the group that I have this year. And so I'm sure that by the end of this year, I will love them just as much.
Yeah, it's sometimes bittersweet when they move on and you're like, oh, but I love you so much.
Yeah.
You're sweet baby angels.
And now then, I have to fall in love with a new group.
And then you're like, who are you even?
Yeah.
I don't even know you. And then eventually
get out of my hair.
eventually you make connections, and I guess that, I mean, it's tricky to make relationships and all that.
Well, that's a nice thing, the way that the grades are set up at our school, that all of the students in my homeroom this year as sixth graders, I taught them all for literature last year as fifth graders. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I mean, in my class, in my homeroom class of 29, there's 4 kids that are new to the school, but the other 25, like, I know them all already.
Yeah.
You know? And so it wasn't like, it's really hard when first day of school, like, you don't know anyone's names, like how, you're trying to, like, establish like the relationship and the routines and everything in the classroom, but like you don't even know their names.
Yeah.
And so it's like,
that is tricky.
Even that small thing is such an advantage of like, and not only knowing their names, but already knowing, you know, quite a bit about their personalities. And because our school is like, you know, a fairly tight-knit community, like knowing a lot of their families as well and their siblings and their parents and things like that. And so it really felt like, you know, you could just kind of hit the ground running, especially because they also, you know, it's not like, hey, welcome to this brand new classroom space you've never been in before, because they were in my classroom every day for literature last year. Mm-hmm. So like a lot of my like unique like rules and routines and my personality, like they're already familiar with me too.
Yeah.
So that's a nice way to start out the year.
That's good. Is it that way is it moving forward, you always will have the fifth graders from the previous year?
Yeah.
And then so you'll always have an established relationship.
Yeah. Our school, the seventh and eighth grade classes share the same core set of teachers, and then the fifth and sixth share the same set. And so like I already I only had them with me once last week, but I had this year's fifth grade class, you know, little tiny newly bumped up from fourth grade.
They're little babies.
Yeah. And so like I had them in my classroom for the first time, and that was a like, hey, meeting new faces, this is Mrs. Kale's room, like this is what we're gonna do in literature, this is our whatever for this classroom. But even them, like I would say I knew about a third of them already by name because of, you know, having taught older siblings or knowing their families. And so like there's a little bit of a learning curve with them, but then I'll have all year to get to know them and before I have them in my homeroom next year.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
That's really nice to have that kind of a little bit of a crutch, but
absolutely.
Like you put in the work already. Like the
that's
year before.
Right. It's not a crutch. I worked for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So what's new with you?
Same.
Yep, figured.
Same thing. Yeah. My class this year, I already know. I think I taught maybe 9 of them already before.
Oh, that's great.
So
when they were TK?
Mm-hmm. So it's really nice. And they have like really lovely families. And then some of the kids who I have not taught had in my classroom, I had their siblings before. So I knew them too. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of felt a little bit similar. I know it will never happen again because it's unique having a looping with your grades from teaching prior.
Yeah, to have skipped around as much. And you don't want to keep skipping around.
I don't. I want to stay where I am for a little, like a little bit. So it was really nice. And I was able to be like, so-and-so, don't lick your friend. Or, you know, it was good to have that. Instead of like, hey, little blonde so-and-so. Hey, you can't. Yeah. Don't do that.
Hey, you.
Hey,
what's your name?
Hey, child.
Get over here.
What?
Small person.
Little person. But it's good. We're getting our rules, routines, rituals. How do you treat each other? Rituals, routines.
Yeah, you know, the pentagrams and the blood sacrifices.
blood orphans. What's that from? Parks and Rec.
Oh yeah.
No, just like the this is where the crayon bin goes. This is where you need to put your homework. All this stuff. But this is something new I'm trying this year, and it's already working really nicely. So, in the past 4 years, I've always had like a tray, paper tray, marked turn in spot where you just turn your work in.
Right.
And all the time I'd always have at least 5 papers, at least, with no names on it.
Right.
And I'd be like, I don't know who this belongs to.
Yeah.
Now I made a nice filing system where it's like super obvious, like big numbers for each kid, and they're assigned their number for the year. Mm-hmm. And I asked them to go put their paper in the file.
Oh,
where it goes.
Okay.
So if they don't put their name, I'll know who it is. Mm-hmm. So already I've trained them to use it.
Yeah.
And it's working out really
nicely. That's fantastic.
I was like, sometimes it's the little things.
Yeah.
You know, where I'm just like tearing my hair out.
Making your job easier.
Yeah. I'm like, whose papers are these? You know, it drives me a little bit nuts. But I saw it over the summer on TikTok. Gotta love it. It will ruin political elections and also give you ideas for for classroom management.
Absolutely.
Ideas. So,
yeah, really even great. Like at sixth grade, they still like they'll still every now and then here and there forget a name on something, and so and usually, you know, I learn their handwriting pretty quickly, and so if it's often it's like, well, there's only one person that I don't have a score written down for, so that's whose paper this is, you know, if there's only one piece with no name on it, but I always like I deduct a point from their score if they forget to put their name on it, because I'm like, and I tell them like this isn't being, you know, like mean or unnecessarily punitive or whatever. And it's like, when you go out into the business world, like these are the kinds of things you need to know how to remember to do, you know, like when you're submitting paperwork at your place of business or you're writing grant, like you need to know that like things need to be properly identified and like these, all of these skills. And I'm like, because there's this, there was a PL that another teacher was on that was all about, it was grading fraud. No, malpractice. They called it grading malpractice.
Okay.
That if you take any element of the assignment that is not related to specifically what the child is supposed to be learning and you allow that to affect their grade, then that's grading malpractice because it's not the goal of the assignment.
Okay.
And I'm like, that's interesting. And it's like, but and it assumes that everything that you ask the kids to do has only one goal. So it's like, if it's a like math homework, say, okay, the goal is to learn how to divide fractions.
Yeah.
But it's like, the goal is also to learn how to write down an assignment and do the right problems that you were told to do, to have it at school and turn it in on time when it was supposed to be turned in, and for it to have your name on it so you get credit for your work. Like, the purpose of the assignment is not only to teach that content, but like all the other life skills that would go along with it.
Yeah.
So that's why I
self-regulation.
Yeah.
And taking ownership of your life.
Yeah, that responsibility. And it's like, we expect so much of kids now. Like, and it's a really quick turnaround, like between being completely helpless, like, you know, first graders, second graders, where it's like, why don't you have your shoes on? Where are your shoes?
Did you have socks when you came in here, right?
Right.
Like, where did your socks go? I don't know.
So your pencil eraser is in your nose. What are we going to do about that?
You lost your socks.
But then all of a sudden they get to like, just in fifth and sixth grade. And all of a sudden it's like, well, guess what? You have 8 different teachers now for 8 different subjects. And they all assign work on different platforms. And you need to keep track of due dates for everything and communicate through email with all these. And it's like this dramatic thing that we're asking them to learn how to do. You know, we do obviously understand that it's a process and it takes time for them to pick up those skills. But it's
sure,
like,
yeah,
putting your name on your paper is, for me, is like symbolic of like that. That's a life skill, you know?
Yeah, and it's a pretty like small little deduction of, yeah, and then be like, hey, remember next time.
Yeah.
Remember when you were annoyed that this happened? Mm-hmm. This will hopefully jog your memory to write it as soon as you get your assignment.
And I say it every time. Anyway.
I say it. It's annoying. I get tired of hearing my own voice sometimes. Yeah.
But I also talk about, like, there's, you like, natural consequences and natural rewards.
Yeah.
And so, you know, like, you forget to bring your lunch to school. Like, the natural consequence of that is you're hungry because you don't have food to eat.
Yeah.
And so it's like there could also be an additional consequence, like, you know, you get punished, like your parents ground you or something, although I don't know why they would ground you for, you know, it's like there's consequences that people put on you for messing up. But then there's also just byproducts of messing up that are what causes you to suffer.
Yeah.
And if someone else isn't doing it to you, it's just what happens.
Sure, sure. I think also it's important, I know we kind of were on a tangent, but
this is a teaching podcast, right?
Pedagogy with Katie and Meredith. I'm always like really mindful of when I notice, and I don't think there are families in our community where they don't have access to a lot of things. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's also important for teachers to be, you know, not reprimanding kids for not having a certain thing that they're supposed to bring from home, or having a certain thing in class, like a supply of some kind, because, you know, and then deducting points for that, or being like pointing a kid out in front of everybody. So I'm not saying you're doing it. I'm just saying that like malpractice, whatever, of homework, whatever, or like, I can understand points of that, but then write your name. It costs them nothing to write their name. You give them a pencil, they can do it. So
nobody's at a greater or lesser advantage of writing their name on their paper.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So anyway.
What were we here for again?
We're here for the gallows.
So. Yeah. And that was my pick, actually, in honor of back to school, because it is set at a school.
At a high school.
I'm
having like horrible flashbacks going to.
Really?
Not really. But, you know, going into Charlotte's school for different meetings and things and be like, like, it just always gives me the heebie-jeebies being around all these teenagers, because it makes me like go back mentally of when I was in high school and it wasn't great. So
Well, we've established that we have different attitudes toward our high school memories and experiences, because I loved high school, and I was also I was in theater. I did theater at Stage Tech in high school.
Definitely relate to this.
Yeah, so this resonated with me on so many levels. But anyway, so as Meredith mentioned, The Gallows came out in 2015. And so here we go. It opens with home movie footage from the audience of a high school theater of a performance of a play called The Gallows. The date stamp on the footage is October 29th, 1993. Whispers from the people recording remark that Charlie's doing such a good job, despite some sort of, quote, last minute change. That we don't obviously know what that is yet. Lights come up on a new scene where Charlie's character is poised on these raised gallows with a noose around his neck, as another actor is reading, you know, his lines for, you know, sentencing this character. Suddenly, the trapdoor on the gallows falls open and Charlie falls through. Screams and panic show us that this was not meant to happen, and Charlie is actually really strangling on the end of the noose. So, horrible accident that takes place during this high school play. Now it cuts to on-screen text telling us that the coming footage that we're about to see is video evidence property of the Beatrice Police Department of Beatrice, Nebraska, and it's dated October 28th, 2013, so 20 years after the footage that the movie opened with. And so the whole film is found footage, which, you know, we've talked about when we did our found footage theme two summers ago. We talked about the advantage of that approach to making a scary movie, because it makes the viewer feel like they're in the scene. They're actually experiencing the events rather than watching it as like a third person observer.
Yeah. Like in Harm's Way also, along with the characters.
Exactly.
And you're like, oh my God, nervous.
And so... This is the found footage that it begins with is footage of a rehearsal on the same high school stage of the same play, The Gallows. So we they're putting on this same play again 20 years later. The scene that's being rehearsed is between students Reese and Pfeiffer. And we can tell that I call him the bro running the camera is friends with Reese, and he calls Pfeiffer obnoxious. Okay, so we're hearing the voice of the guy recording this rehearsal, and he's just like, dude, and he's like kind of making fun of his friend, Reese.
Well, everyone knows trying hard is for losers.
Right?
Ew. What an idiot. Sorry. Here's a little glimpse of what I think about that bozo.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and he's a total cliche.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of high school cliches that serve this movie really well, I think, because most everybody, no matter what your high school experience was personally, you already have those boxes in your head of like, oh, the jock and the drama nerd and the this and that. The person whose voice we're hearing, his name is actually Ryan, is definitely one of those jock bro assholes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thinks he's super cool. So we meet Ryan soon, and the footage continues. We see him hassling his football player friend Reese for dipping his toe into drama. So Reese has quit the football team to be in this play instead. And Ryan's giving him shit for it because that's what bros do, which is something else that like was a very similar to something in my high school experience. That our senior year, there was several boys that had, you know, had played football all 4 years, were like, you know, nice guys, smart guys or whatever, but had only done athletics senior year. They were like, hey, let's try out for some drama stuff. Mm-hmm. And so it was kind of fun. Like, I don't know if their other teammates gave them shit for it or not, but they seemed to enjoy the experience. So I could relate to Reese's choice here.
They seemed comfortable in their own decision.
Hopefully. Okay, and so then Ryan with the camera heads out to football practice and cheerleading practice, and we meet his girlfriend Cassidy, who is the quintessential cliche blonde cheerleader. So we've got, those are our four primary characters. We have Reese, who has quit football to try drama. We have Pfeiffer, the obnoxious drama girl. Mm-hmm. And then we have Ryan, the bro, and Cassidy, his cheerleader girlfriend. So now we're in drama class, and the teacher/director is pumping them up for tomorrow's opening night of the play. And Pfeiffer, who we learn is the assistant director, makes a little speech too, showing clearly that this production is like her passion project.
Yeah.
Like, she's super into it.
Yeah. And then I think we didn't mention that Reese is not great.
No. Also. No, he's struggling in this role.
Yeah, he seems not very sure of himself and seems, you know, like he's... You kind of wonder how I got this part, but...
Yeah, a little bit.
Anyway, I digress.
Yeah, they do mention that the drama's a required class. And so I think everybody that was enrolled in the class has to contribute something, but it's like, you know, the decision to try and like perform the lead as opposed to being like a props person or whatever. But that's kind of, that's mentioned as well. But yeah, Reese definitely like... can't remember his lines, feels really awkward, like it can't talk loud enough. Like, you're right, he's not nailing this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So now there's lots of footage of Ryan messing around school. He's treating the play like it's a big joke, and he's also joking about the death of Charlie, the boy who died in the original performance of The Gallows 20 years before, and he uses the phrase "choke like Charlie." You know, it's like to choke, as in you blow the performance, but also because poor Charlie strangled to death. Ryan also notices several adult spectators in the theater during a rehearsal and goes around and kind of like interviews them with his camera. One tells him that she was in the original show, and she makes a statement that you don't ever get over experiencing something like that. So it's very like, you know, you wonder like, oh, does she, you know, what is she doing here? Like, is she here watching them rehearse because she's still, you know, traumatized by what she observed as a young person or whatever. But then Ryan also asks some questions because the other spectators are all parents of the performers. And one mom mentions that Charlie had a girlfriend, and so it was like really sad when he died. And then another mom says that she had been in the theater when, quote, things have happened, like lights going on by themselves or doors opening and closing on their own. And so it's like, ooh, Charlie, it's like Charlie haunts the theater.
Well, obviously it's haunted.
Obviously. I mean, that's what we're here for.
It felt like a little bit of a Blair Witch Project moment.
Yeah, kind of.
They go and talk to the locals, mm-hmm. you know, and they're like, it's not haunted. And then the little kid's like, oh, and then she's like, don't worry, it's not. And then she's like, it's haunted. That's like one of my favorite parts of that movie. But I kind of had a moment where it's like, this is the lore. This is what the town kind of acknowledges. Yeah. That
they're like, there's these stories.
This is weird.
Yeah. This mm-hmm. this thing happened in the past and people say X, Y, and Z. Or I remember this story from when I was a kid. And
yeah. Yeah.
So as Ryan continues to harass Reese, he realizes that Reese actually has a crush on Pfeiffer, which Reese, you know, is obviously like super embarrassed about and denying or whatever. But Ryan rushes off to tell Pfeiffer, but she doesn't really react when he says anything about it. And he keeps like following her around and like asking her all these other questions. And she's just, you know, kind of she's cheerful and whatever, but she's not really concerned with anything that Ryan's saying or asking. And then Ryan gets pranked back by a techie that he had bullied earlier. And after that little dust up that he has with the with that tech kid leads to Ryan discovering an exterior door to the theater that is broken and can't be locked. So it's like a door from the back of the theater out into the parking lot that is just busted and always open. So he gets this brilliant idea. He goes and proposes to Reese that they come back that night and trash the set so that the show won't go on. Reese is reluctant. Like he doesn't want to do that. He doesn't want to wreck the show, but Ryan convinces him, kind of saying like, man, like if you blow it, then Pfeiffer's going to hate you. And like, everybody's going to hate you if you totally bomb the show or whatever. Like this is for, you know, we need to do this. And so Reese kind of agrees to go along and Cassidy insists on coming too. So the three of them are going to come back that night and use the broken door to get in and wreck the set.
And do some light vandalism.
Light vandalism. Just a dusting.
Yeah.
A dusting of vandalism. okay, so later that night, the three of them head back to the school and they go in through the broken door. The lights won't turn on, so they have only the camera light to see by. And so this is like every found footage movie needs a rationale or a reasoning for why the events are being recorded.
Yeah.
Right. And sometimes, lots of times it's like they're making a documentary, like it's on purpose. They're supposed mm-hmm. to be recording. But sometimes it's, you know, they come up with kind of a creative way to explain why it's being recorded, because then when horrifying things happen, you're like, why would you still bother running the camera? Like yeah, if you think yeah. you're about to die, like you wouldn't be worried about catching everything on camera. And so for this story, they came up with this idea where like they need the light from the camera to see. So that's why the camera is always pointed where they're going or at each other. And that's why they get all the footage.
Right. Yeah.
So Ryan's first order of business is to break into the techie's locker that he's has this little rivalry with and cut up the kid's clothes, which is typical shitty jock bro behavior.
He's like, I'll cut up your black fedoras and your black
black t-shirt. Clothes,
your black t-shirt.
You like cut like nipples where the holes or holes where the nipples would be.
Yeah, I know.
I'm like, that's great.
Okay.
But then so after he's done this, there's a long camera shot of the hallway and we see another locker door open slowly on its own. And then it slams shut. But at the same time as Ryan closes the techie's locker. So Ryan doesn't really notice that it happened.
I think he's like, huh? Oh, well.
Yeah, he kind of like, did I hear something? But he doesn't really. But we see it as the viewer that this door has opened and closed by its own. By its own?
On by its own. Own.
By itself.
On its own.
Okay. So next onto the theater and they start busting up the set, including disabling the gallows. So like starting to unscrew it and take it apart and taking down the noose. But a sudden unexplained noise causes them all to hide. Then it seems like no one's there, so they decide to leave, but they run right into Pfeiffer. She's upset that they're there, obviously, and Reese gives her this story that he was just afraid of letting her down by bombing in the play so that they came to practice. So he's trying to talk them out of getting caught by Pfeiffer mm-hmm. with what they're doing. So while the camera is still with Reese, who's like kind of trying to talk them out of trouble, like in the entryway, Ryan now starts recording with the night vision on his phone, and he and Cassidy are on the stage and Cassidy's like trying to like fix what they messed up and everything so Pfeiffer wouldn't know that they had done the stuff. But Cassidy's also like kind of freaked out and she wants to leave and she makes the comment that her cell phone has no service. So finally, Ryan gives in, like he'll take her home and they head to the door they came in, which now won't open. And they're like, what the fuck? Like, it was totally broken. There was, like, no way to close it, keep it closed, or lock it at all before. And now, all of a sudden, it won't open at all.
They're stuck.
They're stuck. So then the foursome try every door that they can find all over the school, and nothing will open. So that they can't get out of the school. And in her, like, kind of fear and panic, Cassidy blurts out to Pfeiffer that the reason they came was to break up the set. And Pfeiffer runs off in tears.
Your play was a piece of shit anyway. So
she's like, I don't care. I don't care. Who knows? We were here to bust up the set. Deal with it. Like, Cassidy's a hot mess right now.
Yeah, she don't care.
Yeah. So obviously Pfeiffer gets super upset. They all kind of chase after her. Baby. Yeah, it's her baby. She's worked so hard at it.
She's also super bubbly and outgoing and seems to get along with everybody.
Yeah.
Also, so this is kind of crushing, I think.
Yeah, you feel really bad for her. You're like, she's just like this genuine, like, sweet girl who's really invested in this play, and she, you know, loves everybody and, like you say, is really happy and friendly. And then so you just feel bad that, like, something she cares about is getting fucked with by these people that don't care.
That don't care. And Cassidy's like,
fuck you.
Everything you're doing is stupid.
Yeah. Because you're not a cheerleader.
Everything you're doing is stupid, and you're stupid, and your face is stupid. So, Pfeiffer's not thrilled, and rightly so.
Yeah.
In the end.
So and that's the end of the movie.
The end.
It's so terrifying. So when they run after Pfeiffer, they end up back on the stage, and they notice the noose is mysteriously back up in place, hanging on the gallows. And the stairs to the gallows have also been reassembled. So all this stuff they messed up.
They, like, dismantled, they, like, broke a light bulb.
Mm-hmm.
They, like, dismantled some shrubbery.
Yeah, they kicked over
shrubbery.
Shrubbery.
Like, take that! And then...
They'll never be able to fix this.
And then they did the gallows part, which is the important part.
Yeah.
But everything else was, like, very minimal. And
yeah,
I was
very,
like, okay.
Very easy to clean up. But yeah, they
had,
like...
That was the big weird thing that was, it was put back together perfectly, like as if it hadn't happened.
It wasn't just like, oh, this was a tree that was knocked over that was stood back up. Like, he'd had like a screw gun and had unscrewed and taken boards off and started to take it apart, and the noose was, like, down off of the bar, like, on the ground, and when they come back, it's all screwed back together and the noose is back up on the crossbar.
Yeah, and I think I may have noticed that when they went to disassemble it, the noose was actually not even attached to the gallows thing. It was like a rope. It was noose rope, but it was like appeared like it was just draped over it.
Oh yeah, I don't remember.
And then when they came back and it was all like magically put back together, it was like the rope was very much a noose.
Yeah.
It was a gallows. Like, it was tied on there really well and expertly.
Yeah. So, you know, puzzling.
It was Charlie. I just whispered it, listeners.
In case you missed that.
In case you didn't know.
And so they're very rightly, what the fuck about that? And they're already very scared about the fact that they're trapped inside the school and they can't get out. So they're desperate enough at this point that they try to call for help.
Yeah.
So they're like not so much worried anymore about being busted, breaking into school, but like actually just frightened.
Yeah.
That they can't get out. And so they try to call. They go to an office, but the phones are dead. Of course.
No lines out.
What? And their cell phones aren't getting any service, which doesn't make any sense either.
Mm-hmm. Not so much worried about repercussions of being
there anymore. Not anymore. They just want to get the fuck out.
Mm-hmm.
So as they keep looking in the office for something to help, Pfeiffer's like, hey, what's over here? And she leads them through this like maze of filing boxes and cabinets to this weird door. The door is kind of spooky and like and odd, but it's the only one they found that opens. So they go through. They put long, dark, scary hallways to who knows where with eerie noises drifting through them. So they're like in the belly of the beast all of a sudden. Like they wandered through some storage room in the high school and are now in like some like deep, dark hallway through the building.
Yeah, I was like, is Mama down there?
Kind of. It had that feeling.
The barbarian feeling where they're going through tunnels and weird stuff. And there's like that weird...
And you
TV.
Feel like it shouldn't be there,
and you're
right?
Like, is there a breast milk, breastfeeding?
Is there, are there hairy bottle nipples Baby for bottle us to nipples. Drink I off know. Of?
No, but it felt strange. I was like, it shouldn't be here in a school, like a weird kind of corridor where
very
in the depths.
Okay, so going down all of those halls and everything, they come to another door, which also opens to reveal a storage room filled with junk and a TV set that is turned on to static. But as Pfeiffer reaches out to the TV, it suddenly jumps to a news report from 1993 about Charlie's death. So that's peculiar.
Just normal.
Just, I mean, why wouldn't that be running on a TV in the middle of the night in the belly of the high school building? From an interview with Charlie's girlfriend on the report, Ryan recognizes her as the woman that he talked to in the theater. So the one that said she had been in the show was actually Charlie's girlfriend.
Yes.
And now she was here watching the rehearsal for their show. The news report also reveals that Charlie was the understudy for the character who ended up in the noose. And Charlie took the stage that night when the lead actor, quote, called in sick. So now we know what they were referring to. Like, Charlie's doing so well, given the last minute change, because he was actually the understudy. He wasn't supposed to be playing that character that night. Charlie's original role in the show was actually the hangman. So,
interesting plot twist.
Yeah, just a little nugget of information there.
He's like, I'll hang you.
Yeah, or not.
Or not.
In the final image of the news report, showing the whole cast from 1993, Reese sees something suddenly, like notices something, and rushes off, like kind of freaking out, and the others follow him.
He's like, that guy looks like me.
So he goes to a display case elsewhere in the building and pulls down a print of the old cast photo from 1993 and confirms what he never knew before, which was his dad was the actor who called in sick, putting Charlie up on the gallows in the noose.
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun! Yeah.
Was it ever established if his dad was being a shyster or if he was actually sick?
Yeah, they never answered that question.
Like, did he just bail and be like, this is stupid, I'm not doing it?
It could be. Like, that's kind of the indication based on the idea that Reese was considering doing the same thing. But they're all we do meet his dad in that very brief scene earlier, like before they leave to go to the school that night.
Yeah.
And his dad is like lecturing him about not like finishing things that he started and not quitting things. And like, and I'm not sure, like, I couldn't really hear very well if he was talking just about quitting the football team or if he was talking about Reese possibly quitting the show. But his dad was like, you can't just quit things that you commit to.
Yeah.
So
maybe he's having some survivor's guilt. Maybe he's being like, I did something similar, or
yeah,
I guess it's ambiguous.
Yes. But suddenly the group realizes that Ryan isn't there with them anymore. So when they ran off to look at the photo, they lost Ryan
that
somehow.
That guy's gone.
Oh no, it's such a loss.
I'm so sad. So upset.
So we cut to the footage from Ryan's phone because we know the camera with the light went with the other three, and Ryan had his phone when he finds himself alone. So he goes through some door marked maintenance, then he crawls through this other low door to find himself in this like barren dungeon like room. So it's like very, like you said, like Mama, very feeling like, why are these rooms in this high school building? Why do these spaces exist? Like, this is so bizarre.
Were they trying to be like, this is like the boiler room, like
Nightmare on
Elm Street, kind of like there's all these hidden places that that are, you know, no good can come here.
No good can come of it.
Bad stuff.
So, it's just in this room. There's like nothing in it. It's got this low ceiling. And then looking up, he zooms in with his phone on what seems to be the source of this weird creaking sound. And we can clearly tell that we are looking at the underside of a body that is swinging in the air. So like something is strung up by a rope up there, like a body swinging back and forth. And that's what the creaking noise is. But then suddenly Ryan hears Cassidy screaming and he runs off. He finally finds the rest of the group, who fill him in on the truth about Reese's dad. And as they're all freaking out, so they're in a like a hallway, like outside of the theater now, like a hallway in the school building, and they hear clanging noises, so they all freeze, and they're completely silent. And next, these heavy footsteps start treading like slowly above them, so like on the floor, like on the ceiling above them. And the you know, they're following it, tracking it with the camera, and the footsteps pause above Cassidy, and she's like staring straight up at the ceiling, like, you know, and then she's kind of got her hand like resting lightly like on her collarbone, and she's suddenly jerked into the air, just like out of nowhere. And then afterwards, after they like pull her down and everything, we see that she has severe rope burns on her neck.
Yeah.
And this is a point where in the typing of my recap, I left it in. So there were, you know, not to jump ahead to do I think this is scary or not, but there were three or four points when I was writing this recap where I ended up with gibberish typing in my recap because
you were scared.
Because I jumped so much at a moment in the movie that my fingers just slammed on the keys.
You're like, ah!
And that just,
I can't control my fingers.
I can't. They were just resting on my home row keys. And then something happened. And that's, I would say this was, this at least the fourth or fifth time I've seen this movie. Mm-hmm. And it was still like eliciting that level of reaction because I didn't remember every single jump scare and exactly when it all happened. Mm-hmm. And it got me. It got me a bunch of times.
Yeah.
Okay, so now Reese and Ryan are arguing over who's to blame for their predicament, which is super helpful. And we see...
you like a lot of a healthy amount of infighting
right.
and a survival,
yeah.
You know, situation.
Yeah, and then like just throw in a dusting of toxic masculinity in there yep. with it.
Yes.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
It's a recipe for... not disaster.
All good things.
But then as they're fighting, we see the rigging ropes start twanging and shaking behind them. So like more stuff is, you know, activating on its own mm-hmm. around them in the theater.
These ropes are haunted.
These ropes are haunted. It's witches.
There's witches here.
And then finally the girls show up and break up the fight. Then Pfeiffer notices a vent. Like way up high that conveniently has a ladder just the right height leaning against the wall beside it. And Ryan decides that he's going to try to use the ducting to get outside.
He's like, we're saved.
Solution to the problem. And they're all just like, no, dude, don't do it. Like, mm-hmm. and he was just like, fuck you, Charlie. I don't care about you. I'm going to get out of here, blah, blah, blah. And so he's just like raging this whole time as he goes over and scoots over the ladder and is climbing up the ladder and he's shouting at Charlie.
But nobody offers to even try to hold
the ladder. No, but yeah, they're just trying
Everyone's
to get him
like,
to
you're
stop
dumb.
Doing it.
Stop being dumb. I'm like, you know, okay, well, yeah. either you... Okay, that guy sucks.
He does suck.
But also, it's like you could hold the ladder and see if it works.
Yeah. But they're also yelling at him to stop yelling at Charlie.
Yeah.
Because at this point, like, you know,
like something's weird.
Yeah. Something untoward is going on.
Yeah.
And the best explanation is that it has something to do with this spirit of Charlie,
yes.
this superstition that everybody has. And so they're like, hey, how about we don't fuck with that right now?
Hey, let's taunt it. And I'm going to climb this ladder.
Right.
All the good ideas.
And shocking that it's Ryan making these decisions.
Well, he's a level-headed fellow.
Right?
I don't know
Very
why
calm,
he would do that.
Intelligent. He's at the top of the huge ladder, and Ryan is suddenly launched through the air and down onto the stage. He's hurt, and the others run off, and I put to do something? Like, what do they run off? Like,
well, I'm like, are they trying to get a first aid kit? Are they,
or, yeah,
are they
like, you've already
do?
Checked all the doors, you've checked the phones, like, what are you running to do in this moment? But
well, they go to run in circles.
Yeah.
We have to go run in circles and pretend we're... trying to help.
So Reese and Pfeiffer run off first, and then a moment later, like, Cassidy also heads off after them, and so, but once all three of them are outside the theater, now the door's back to the theater, and the injured Ryan, they slam closed and they won't open. So the three of them are outside these doors to the theater. They hear voices, and then they hear a bang on the door from the inside of the theater, but then a moment later, Reese is able to slowly open the door. They walk, you know, they like walk out onto the stage, like super cautiously looking, but Ryan is gone. And they only find his busted cell phone laying on the stage.
Yeah.
Womp womp. We're all so sad. Big loss.
I wanted to hear some more nonsense from that
was
guy.
He was really contributing so
from
much to this. Now Cassidy is again unable to breathe from some invisible noose around her neck. So she's choking. But while that's going on, we suddenly jump back to Ryan's phone footage. So kind of like back in time a little bit when he's first laying on the stage after the fall. And we see his broken leg, like it's fucked up, like 90 degree angle. And then we see the moment when Cassidy runs out the door to call after Reese and Pfeiffer. And we see the door slam shut behind her on its own. But now we're seeing it from Ryan's perspective, still on the stage. He's terrified. He's scanning the theater with his phone, finally turning to see the silhouette of a hangman standing in the wings. And he's like, oh, Jesus Christ. So he's freaking out.
He's like, Charlie.
Is that you, Charlie?
Hey, I'm sorry
hey,
about
bro.
What I said.
What's up? You play football?
Sorry about what I said. sure you were great in the play.
Good, yeah. You delivered the lines well. And so Ryan is freaking out for a little bit, but then after a minute, the figure seems to be gone and he falls silent before suddenly being jerked upward into the rafters by a noose, leaving only his phone behind. And so we see, because he drops the phone recording on the stage face up. And so we're looking straight up from the phone's angle, seeing him being pulled up into the air by this noose.
Yeah.
And then the next thing we see is Reese's face as he finds the phone.
Yeah. And Ryan is, you no have more. To assume, is unalived by that rope.
Okay. So back to the remaining three people, the three kids still looking for an escape. Reese moves a table to try climbing out some high locker room windows until the camera battery finally starts to die, and with it, his light source. He gets his own phone going for light from that, and he gives the camera to the girls, telling Pfeiffer to stay with Cassidy because she's obviously, like, still freaking out. She's devastated that Ryan, her boyfriend's gone. She keeps, you know, like, suffocating. But when Reese goes back into the locker room to the windows, the table he moved has disappeared. And he's like, what the fuck? Suddenly he hears his cell phone ringing, but it's gone. So he looks, he like runs around looking for it, and he finds it laying in a locked locker, and he can see through the door, the locker door, that it's his dad calling. Pfeiffer runs into the locker room to see what's going on, and Reese manages to break into the locker in time to answer the call, but it's not his dad. It's a voice saying his line from the play where he says, "He wants me. He's coming for me." Spooky. Mm-hmm. But of course, when Pfeiffer ran into the locker room to see what was going on with Reese, that left Cassidy alone.
Oh, no. oh, no. I'm very upset.
And so this image was most of the movie posters and like the image associated with the PR for the film.
It's like all red.
Yeah. And it's like, because it's exit lighting or emergency lighting or whatever. So the illumination is red. And then she's sitting on the floor, kind of folded over in half with like her face in her arms. And I put the scariest possible scene of dark lurking hallways behind her back. She's basically like sitting in front of a divider between one dark hallway and another dark hallway.
Yeah.
With her back to
too long,
both dark hallways.
Too long corridors.
Like the one place I would never.
What could go wrong?
Ever sit. I wouldn't sit there under the best of circumstances, let alone if I'm already being pursued by a supernatural force.
Yes.
I'm like, come on, Cassidy.
Nobody said Cassidy was smart.
Get your shit together. Come on.
Well, she's not gonna.
No. I like her nail polish, though. She's got some sweet nail polish.
I don't remember what her nails look like.
It was just like this really bright blue that's like, you know, contrasts her like super tan skin, her white teeth and her blonde hair. It was like very contrasty.
Very sky blue.
Very, very cheerleader-ish.
All right.
So, ever so slowly, the hangman appears behind her down one of these halls, and is very like silently, slowly approaching her as it like kind of solidifies. We see it's floating. It has no legs. It's just kind of floating toward her, but stops still behind her, unaware that anything is there. She crawls forward to grab the camera so that she can use it to look at her neck to where the rope burns were. And so because she has like, you know, put her face right up against the lens, we can't see what's behind her anymore. Mm-hmm. When you get a look at her neck, it's like it's grotesque. Like it's not just a like, oh, I got a rope burn. It's like a big welt with just like folds of skin. Like it almost looks like it's already rotting or something. It just looks really nasty. And then she does turn and look where we know the hangman was, but he's gone. Mm-hmm. So then she slowly turns back to the camera, and as her neck comes back into view in the frame, we see that there's a noose around it that suddenly jerks tight and drags her down the hall and through a slamming door at the end of the hall, leaving only one shoe behind.
Yeah.
She gets jerked back with such force that one of her shoes flies
She's
off.
She's my kids.
Exactly.
Oh, God.
They were so white, just like my teeth, and now this one's here and the other one's gone. Then Reese and Pfeiffer run into view, but of course, at this point, Cassidy's gone, so they just find the camera and the shoe.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Poor Cassidy.
My two favorite characters are gone.
They're gone. Okay, rats. So Reese gets the idea to pull the fire alarm, and now the theater is filled with this intermittent flashing red light and then, like, the beeping siren sound of the fire alarm. And so, like, honestly, like, intermittent light is, like, the perfect recipe for a scary scenario like this, because it's like, you can see it, now you can't. Now you can see it, now you can't. So things can appear, like, every time the lights come back on, you're expecting, like, something's going to appear.
Yeah.
Or something is there, and then the lights go off, and then it's gone when the lights come back on. So it's, like, really perfect for that.
Yeah. It made me think of Lights Out.
Absolutely. When she keeps flipping the switch. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's what I was thinking, too. Okay. And so as this is happening, the camera shows a shadow appearing on the floor and then vanishing. And then the hangman appears and, you know, is obviously, like, Reese and Pfeiffer freaking the fuck out. So they start climbing this ladder backstage to escape, like, a ladder up into the rafters above the stage. The hangman is on their heels, and you actually get, like, a very scary looking close up shot of his face, like, right in the frame of the camera. And at that point, it does start to look a little hokey, because, like, you always say, like, when you can't see it and it's just your imagination, it's scarier. Now it's like, well, no, it's a hangman's mask. It's like a hood.
Yeah.
And the eyes are, like, stitchy, like, stitched and everything. And mm-hmm. so it does lose a little, it loses obviously a lot of its mystery as we see more of it. Mm-hmm. But it's still, I mean, it's still pretty creepy.
I mean, he's chasing them.
Absolutely.
And they're like, no.
So they get up into the rafters and close the little, like, trapdoor or whatever behind them. And then the fire alarm stops. So they think that that means that the police have arrived and turned off the alarm. As they try to make their way back down to the stage, suddenly they turn and there are just ropes draped everywhere. Like noose ropes that weren't there before. All of a sudden, ropes everywhere. And then, you know, they look down and they find a copy. They find the copy of the cast photo that Ryan had stuffed in his pocket earlier. Here I have another bit of gibberish typed into my my recap, which means this was another jump scare that got me. Because Reese holds the photo up in front of the camera view so that that's what we're seeing. And then when he moves it from camera view, it reveals Ryan's body strung up with a noose. So it's, like, right on Ryan's face, choked to death or whatever. And then Reese turns, and behind Pfeiffer, we see Cassidy's feet dangling, and we know it's Cassidy because one shoe is missing.
Yeah, only one kid.
Yeah. So it's a kind of a nod to that whole body reveal that you get at the end of a lot of horror movies.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, so they get back down to the stage, but no one's there. But the door on the other side of the stage that leads to the parking lot, the one that they used to get in, is now standing open. So they rush across the stage and out. Such a relief. Oh my gosh, it's so noisy outside.
Sorry.
Did you call the popo? Is that a police helicopter?
Probably. Maybe it's someone rescuing someone from the cliff.
Oh,
at the ocean.
Absolutely. Surfer went out too far.
Yeah.
Okay, so yes, we're relieved. We're out. We're safe. We're outside. We're in the parking lot. But then Reese turns and sees, oh no, Pfeiffer is not with him. He thought that they ran out together, but she's not there. And he hears her choking and gasping back in the theater. And I love this part because he's like, you can see he's torn. He, like, turns back to the parking lot and then back to the door, like, ugh.
He's like,
what? But, like, just moments before up in the rafters, he was promising her he would not let anything happen to her. And so he's like,
he's like, God, I got really good at delivering that line. Because I have to go back in.
Damn it. Damn you. So he goes back into the theater. He finds her choking on the stage and he crouches down next to her. And the spotlight suddenly blares onto them. And we see that they're in the pose from their scene in the play, the one that we saw them rehearsing at the very beginning of the movie. And so they say their lines to one another and they share the kiss that they never managed to do in rehearsal. And then more lights come up onto the stage, illuminating the gallows itself next to them. And so Reese, like, you know, because now they're fully like, okay, this is Charlie. Charlie's spirit is here. We're being, you know, pursued for that reason and everything. And so Reese is going to do this gallant thing. So thinking that it'll spare Pfeiffer's life and save her, he climbs the gallows and puts the noose around his neck. And at that point, he's like, you know, trying to get Pfeiffer to leave. He's like, go, like, get out of here. Like, the door's open, like, save yourself. Like, he's going to sacrifice himself for her. But she just keeps, like, calling out to him his character's name over and over again. Like, no, August, don't leave me. And he's like, what the fuck, stop calling me August, get out of here. Like, he's trying to save her and she won't leave. Mm-hmm. And so, I lost my place.
You're like, something is amiss.
Something's not right. Now all of a sudden we're like, what's wrong? What's wrong with Pfeiffer? What's going on here, Pfeiffer? And so they're arguing as we see flashes of the hangman's figure appearing and disappearing behind Reese, until the trapdoor in the gallows finally opens and he falls through. So like the hangman is like there and not there and there. He's like very... not the effervescent was the word that came to mind, and that's not not the word I was thinking of. But he's like, he's intangible and like kind of translucent, and you know, so it's like obviously a spirit of some kind, not, you know, physical form.
Right. Yeah.
And so as Reese is dangling at the end of the rope, Pfeiffer calmly walks downstage and bows to the empty theater. The flashes of the hangman are next to her, holding her hand and bowing with her. Mm-hmm. So we're like, oh, so you're a team. And then loud clapping begins from the dark seats and the house lights come up and one lone audience member stands up. It's a woman. And then everything goes dark.
Yeah.
And so you're like, oh, fuck. Like, and we can talk about whether or not you saw that coming. Anyway, so our final scene, it cuts to police footage entering a home with guns drawn. They work their way through the house, pausing to show framed family photos of a younger Pfeiffer with a grown-up Charlie's girlfriend. So you're like, oh, okay. So she's the daughter of Charlie's girlfriend.
Yeah, but like how could she be Charlie's child?
No, I don't think that they were implying she was Charlie's child.
Oh, okay. Because I was like, she would be like 20.
Well, I mean, maybe she could have faked it.
She could have faked it?
Faked, you know, like enrolled in school with like a fake birth certificate or something. Oh, yeah. Like she actually, I mean, we know all these actors are in their 20s anyway.
Like 21 Jump Street.
You're yeah,
like
exactly. She 21 Jump Streeted that shit.
She's like, I'm 30.
I'm 34, but I'm gonna play 16.
Put my hat on backwards.
What's up, young people?
How's it going?
What's the haps on the craps?
How's the rock music going these days?
Okay, but yeah, so it's now like confirmed and revealed. She's the daughter of Charlie's girlfriend, and the cops are now in their home. There is a door ajar, and inside the cop finds a room filled with all things theater and the gallows. So like all, you know, costumes and playbills and all of this stuff.
Super obsessed.
Yep. And then it turns to show a TV playing footage of Charlie's death, the footage that was taken of the original play when Charlie died. Then the camera footage turns to show Pfeiffer and her mother sitting on the bed, creepily watching the TV while Pfeiffer gets her hair brushed.
They're like,
like it's a mother-daughter moment. Yeah, they're like, they're super zoned out, like
weirdos.
Super weirdos. Yeah, yeah. Like the bubbly, personable like Pfeiffer that we like knew before. We're like, oh, okay, so that was just a front because this is. Yeah,
so that's not you. You're a crazy person. Yeah,
you're a lunatic, and you're getting your hair brushed. And the mom is like in this old timey white nightgown or something. Like Pfeiffer's still wearing the outfit she had on the whole time, but the mom's in like a nightgown.
That's weird.
You're like, why not?
Okay.
It's bedtime. I'm brushing your hair and watching, you know, this guy die. So the cop calls out for help from the partner that he came into the house with. And then when turns back to see both women now turned looking at him. So it's one of those like cut away, cut back. And then suddenly they're just like the hairbrushing has stopped and they're both turned like still motionless, just staring at him. Mm-hmm. And then he calls out again to his partner. And then as he looks down the hall, he sees his partner slam into the hallway wall with a noose around his neck. And there's one last turn of the camera toward the room. The women are standing, facing the side, turning out facing the hangman, who lunges at the camera. The end.
One last jump scare.
One last jump scare of that hangman face right in your face.
Uh-huh.
And that's the gallows.
Yes.
Meredith, yep. Did you think it was scary?
No.
No?
No.
Oh, my God. I can't wait to tell you how scared I was. But tell me what you thought.
Okay. I think I'd give this movie a C.
What?
I give it a C.
I'm so disappointed.
But I would say I liked it a lot more than a lot of other found footage movies that were like that jumped on the found footage bandwagon.
Yeah, because this was 2015. This was like right at kind of a prime peak for that.
Prime time for that. I liked the setting. I thought, you know, as someone who works in school, it's a great setting for creepy, weird.
You take like, all the people all out of yourself. There and it's nighttime, which is not a time you're supposed to be in that place.
No. And you're all locked in. And then I did find the first few minutes, you know, in engaging with the footage of Charlie, the original, where he died. And you're like, and suddenly it seemed really real to me where they're like, oh, my gosh, you know, and it show that that play and that tragedy happened. But I think a lot of it was just connecting with the characters. A lot of the, I mean, some of them I was like, I don't care that you are dead and you're annoying to me.
Well, yeah, they were all annoying.
Annoying. But like the jump scares, I didn't really jump that much. I didn't at all. I watched it with Victor and I were watching it, but he was quiet. He wasn't sitting, trying to be himself when
he put a pin in that for the duration of the movie.
Well, like the peanut gallery where talking commentary. Stuff and I'm like, shh, be quiet, I'm trying to watch this. But there are parts that I enjoyed though. You know, that idea of a hangman or an entity that was killed haunting the drama department or, you know, whatever. is scary. I liked that they were basically foiled. Because they went in there, but it was also kind of a setup to make sure that guy got the part, essentially. Because I'm assuming it was kind of, they're trying to enact some kind of revenge because Charlie died and he shouldn't have died under these circumstances. And that's what his girlfriend and Charlie, I guess, is feeling that way too, I'm assuming. But I think also I kind of was like, Pfeiffer's there to do something to them.
Like, yeah, that's what I was wondering, because their intention was obviously for that to be the surprise or like the twist at the end, that Pfeiffer was part of it as opposed to another victim. Right. But that would have been one of my questions is, did you figure that out?
Well, I was like, she never said why she was there, I don't think. And I just assumed she was there to.
She said that she saw his car outside. So it's kind of weird that like she was driving by.
I live across the street and I saw your car outside, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. With my weird mom, she stopped brushing my hair, so I could come here. But I wondered why she was there, and I was like, I thought she was there to do something to them. Mm-hmm. Or first weird. I don't know. I didn't trust her. I thought.
She's too bubbly.
Yeah.
I don't trust bubbles.
People who are like that. I'm like, there's something wrong with you. You're like compensating a little too much.
Nobody's that happy.
Yeah. Especially not her. But I appreciated it. I thought it was fun. I would watch it with Charlotte.
I think she'd like it with Grace.
I think she would like it. But is it in my tops for found footage movies? No. Because it's Blair Witch, Paranormal Activity, a few others.
Wreck.
Well, I love that one. Yeah. That's great. That's about it. Sorry. I didn't hate it.
Yeah.
So, but a lot of people hate it.
Really?
It's like, it got like a 1.5 stars.
That's such a bummer.
So people like hated it. And I don't feel that way. Mm-hmm. I was like, it's not really that bad. You know, you don't have to like shit all over this movie. Just because. But I did actually appreciate the hallways and all the weird rooms and stuff. Mm-hmm. I thought that was I thought that was kind of cool and creepy and weird, and did add to the feeling of like, oh, you know, you felt like you were also in danger too, along with the characters because of the found footage, you know, the way it's filmed. But you thought it was scary.
I did. Yeah, it's funny actually. You know, and I'm always all about investing yourself in the experience of watching it to maximize the possibility that you'll be scared, rather than allowing anything or intentionally introducing anything to like guard against that. And then this viewing, because like I'm pretty sure I saw this in the theater, and then I have it on DVD, so I've watched it 2, maybe 3 times since the first time I saw it. And I did show it to, when I showed it to Grace, it was probably the last time I'd seen it, and so it's been a couple years. But you know, we also talk about like movies that are we've seen multiple times. When you're watching it, when you're rewatching it, you don't always have eyes on the screen the whole time.
Yeah.
And you're not giving it your full attention.
Sure.
And in this instance, obviously I was, because I was writing my recap. But that also means that I'm like pausing it constantly and then restarting it and then maybe backing it up if I want to get like word for word what somebody said. And so that would interfere a little bit with the scary feelings building. Mm-hmm. But I started watching it. It was still daylight outside, so I had to put the blinds down so that there wouldn't be glare on the TV. And then, like, it gradually got dark over the course of as I was going through it and watching it. And I got to a point, I think it might have been around when Cassidy first gets, like, choked in the hallway, where I was like, at that point I was in a pitch black room because it had gotten totally dark outside and there hadn't been any lights on before. And I was like, was creeped out enough that I was like, I need to take a break. Right. And so I paused it and then I, you know, went out in the living room and like watched a little bit of the end of the convention, the Democratic National Convention, and hanging out, and then checking Press Your Luck came on. And I was like, I'm not watching this shit. So I was like, okay, I got a little bit of a reset. So then I go back into the other room and I started going again, but I hadn't turned any additional lights on. And I like pretty quickly got very creeped out again. And I had like the black open door to our closet on one side. And I kept like hearing noises from the closet. So I'm like, I'm gonna fucking turn on the closet lights so that I'm not like thinking about that the whole time. But then I had to use the light from my laptop to illuminate the closet to like turn the light on. And that's just what they were doing with their devices in the movies. That was spooky. And there was like a black hoodie hanging on a hook that looked just like the Hangman. And I was like, I got really creeped out. And it's like, man, not the first time I was watching it. Like, I know the whole story.
You're like, I know what happens. I've already know what seen happens. This. I live here. I shouldn't be so nervous in my closet. And this is my like, house.
It's, you know, it had been long enough that I didn't remember exactly when jump scares happened. And so, and I'm susceptible to jump scares because I'm a relatively jumpy person. So that makes sense. But I think the jump scares were also more effective on me because I was creeped out already. Like, it succeeded in creeping me out, which made me more susceptible to the jump scares.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when it was done, I had to watch an episode of Schitt's Creek before I could go to bed.
Oh.
I was that scared.
Yeah, you're like, I need a little palate cleanser so I don't...
Yeah, just a reset.
Pee the bed.
Exactly. And it's funny because, like, I don't think that this is, you know, a pinnacle of filmmaking.
Yeah.
But there is something about this movie that, and the reason why I suggested it, I've always liked it and I've always thought it was scary. And I will say that the one other movie that immediately comes to mind that will still creep me out to the point where I'm like, I don't want to be in the dark, mm-hmm. is actually way worse than this. And it's The Bye Bye Man.
I've never seen it.
might have to do that one at some point,
so
or at least
I
have you watch it.
And be like, Katie,
yeah, you'd be so disappointed
on.
In me. And it's another one where I've seen it probably like half a dozen times. It doesn't have, it doesn't rely on jump scares quite as much.
Yeah.
But that lurking, what's around the corner, what's in the dark, what's behind you, like it's that same kind of thing. And I think that just must be a big thing for me, like
it must
something that particular that really scares me, because movies that play on that work on me clearly. Yeah. Like,
you're like,
definitely.
Yes. And me, I'm like, who cares?
You're like, I don't even care that you're in there. Hang them all already. I hate them.
I hate them. Get out of here. Get out of here, I said. Go up to the rafters with Charlie. I don't give a shit.
Is this over yet? Jesus.
No, I didn't feel like, oh, God, I hate this.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad about that. I just would say it was okay.
Yeah.
But I didn't hate it as much as, like, Leprechaun. Oh, or something. Man. Sorry. I will always hate Leprechaun.
Leprechaun is that's culturally offensive for you to say such.
Let me say, I like it more than The Witch and Midsommar.
Woohoo!
So,
I'll take it.
You should take it.
Yeah.
Because so many people would be like so mad.
Yeah, they would.
Like film connoisseurs. Like, listen, your opinion doesn't matter, actually, now that I've heard that.
Yeah. Well, you know.
Oh, well.
And that's what, you know, I tell my students all the time that it is a fact that everyone is entitled to their opinion, but our goal is to always have an informed opinion.
Yeah.
So your opinion doesn't make you sound stupid.
Right.
But when it comes to what scary movies scare you, I think that there's no informing that. It's just, it's personal. It's very personal.
It's very subjective.
Yeah.
Because and situational. Either you have fears or phobias or things, experiences you has, had as a child yeah. that, you know, scared the crap out of you. And it's very unique. So what scares me?
Not a lot.
But when I do have that moment, I'm like, oh, God, I kind of want to barf. Like, yeah. I'm just like, oh, I'm never jumping. I'm just like, oh, this is making me anxious and giving me a hurts my tum-tum.
Yeah. Well, yeah, when I was telling Tom, like, how creeped out I was and everything, see, he's like, I just don't understand, like, why is this fun, though? Like, why do you seek this out? And it's I can't explain it to you.
It's being on a roller coaster because it's not real.
Yeah.
When you turn on your lights and you watch Schitt's Creek and you are like, oh.
It goes away. It's fine. Then it's not
this
real.
This is fine.
Yeah.
But this is not, like, a real thing. So.
And you said that it's short-lived fear. I don't know if I even realized there was a sequel to this. And yeah, you said that you, like, got informed a little bit on what it was about.
Yeah, there's people that are, and there's a girl who is wants to be in a play for her school, and there's a recruiter coming, and she has, like, these big dreams, but she's told always by her family that she's garbage. And she goes to move in. She
so
like,
it's
leaves.
Matilda.
Yeah. What's she do reading for? She goes to live with her sister, who's on her own. She's an adult woman who is a fashion. She, like, makes clothes and stuff. So she goes to live with her sister. And she decides to start reading lines to prepare for this recruiter guy from the gallows. And then also at the same time on the internet, there's, like, this craze of doing the Charlie challenge where he, you know, tried to summon him, basically.
Oh, okay.
So she kind of gets engrossed in that. And it's, like, it's weird. It's disjointed from what I saw on the recap or whatever. It was not good at all. So
not as good as the original.
Not as good as that masterpiece. But, you know, it's like they were given, I think, from what the recapper said, it's found Flix. I watch him all the time. He's kind of fun to watch. But he mentioned that there was a bigger budget, but it's just kind of felt like it was squandered and not, you know, not much came of it. So don't even bother. Don't bother.
Okay.
Or watch the recap. There's no, you know, use in wasting your time, probably.
Okay.
So.
Well, I'm fine with that because I love the first one.
Yeah, don't taint. Don't taint the series. Or taint the first one.
I would just be enraged.
Yeah, you probably would
be. To see the disservice done.
Yes. So.
Okay.
Just skip it. Would be my best.
Okay.
Best, you know,
well,
advice.
I guess, I mean, I don't have any, fun facts or trivia about this. There probably isn't much.
No, I didn't actually look it up.
Yeah. But I think that
I was watching about the sequel and other stuff about the movie.
Yeah.
I think the only thing I was like, is this a gallows even a play? No, it's not real. So I was like, oh, okay. That's it.
Yep.
That's
there
all
you go.
You can find.
That's my fun
all
fact.
Right, fun fact. Not real.
This play is fictional. The fictional play is fictional.
Yeah. Mm. And then thinking, would a school allow the play to go on again?
Yeah. Well, and they do.
Such a liability.
Yeah.
Probably
they
not.
Reference that. They say, oh, when the director is talking to them in class, and he's like, it's been a long road to get us here, you know, fighting the parent board or what, like the PTA, like, so obviously when they first, you know, said we want to put on this play again, like, people were against it.
They're like, are you freaking kidding?
Rightfully so.
Yeah.
Yeah, not just for, it's like, it's an affront and an offense to the family of the boy who was killed, and like you say, it's a liability, like, it's, you know, that accidentally killed a student before.
Yeah.
Like, they would never let you do that again.
No.
But, But Pfeiffer was determined.
She was determined.
Yeah.
She used her bubbly personality and
manipulated
shiny,
the hell
luscious
out of everyone.
Hair
she
that,
did have gorgeous
that mommy,
hair.
That mommy brushed.
Mommy brushes
and,
it every
made
night.
Made it happen.
Yeah. And then, and that all makes sense too, once you know that she was behind it, like, you understand why Reese was in that role, even though he sucked.
Yeah, he sucked big time.
Yeah, and you're like, oh, because this is, that's who they're trying to get revenge on.
Yeah,
it was a setup. For his dad's actions.
It was a setup from the very beginning.
From the very beginning. Psychopaths.
And who locked him in? Maybe it was her mom, or maybe it was Supernatural.
That let who in?
locked them in.
Oh, locked them in. Yeah. I always thought that the implication with everything, everything trapping them was the supernatural force.
Oh, okay.
Because it seemed like, especially with Pfeiffer bowing with the hangman at the end, like they were, and then they're acting like kind of possessed at the end as well. Like they were his servant, the servants to the supernatural force.
Yeah.
And so they like, you know, rigged everything so that it could exact its revenge or Charlie could get his revenge for his death. And they were helping him accomplish that. So I don't think that they needed to physically lock any doors. I think Charlie took care of that. That's okay. Just my take
well,
on it.
Well, eventually she went there to the theater to watch the mom.
That's true. She was there at the end.
So.
Yeah. Good point.
Maybe she was there and left the door open.
Perhaps.
She's like, I'm here. Daughter.
I'm so proud of Mommy's so proud of
I'm
you.
So proud of you.
So for next time, we are going to do a film that is going to start a little bit of a mini theme project.
Yes.
You know, we've done summer themes. There's a couple times, I think we've done like October Halloween themes in the past. Now we're just doing themes all the time, any time of year.
Yeah, we just felt like we needed a theme.
Yeah, we need a theme. We need guidance. And that theme is going to be like viral-based horror. So horror movies that are related to viruses attacking humans, essentially. And we've already done a couple of the big ones, like the main ones. Which ones did you say we had done?
We've done Dawn of the Dead and Wreck.
Yeah.
That usually pop up on lists for those kind of movies.
Right.
But
a lot of zombie ones are usually the cause of the zombies is a virus or an infection of some kind. And so we're going to start the first one for that project. We're going to start for next time is The Crazies.
Yes. Not the original by Romero, but the remake that came out in 2010.
Okay.
With Timothy Oliphant.
Yeah.
Oliphant?
I've never known. And I love that guy, but I don't know how to pronounce his name.
I love him too. He's amazing. So I am excited to talk about it and do our recap.
Yeah.
And then watch all sorts of yucky movies.
Oh, yes. Yeah, so people getting sick. See, now that COVID is so far behind us, this would have been a good COVID project.
Yeah, because we want to like dig deep into our fears and anxieties.
Right. Yeah. Let's really pick at that scab.
Yeah, let's just rip it right open. All right, well, thanks for joining us. Good conversation. We'll see you later.
Bye.
Bye.